small group. I think there's a homework due today. So they're all working on that?
Maybe they forgot.
Anyways. There was a two-dimensional thing I called curl, and there's a three-dimensional version of it as well. So that's one I want to get into today. 3D vector fields are a little bit harder to plot. You'll want to maybe think of them a little bit more abstractly. You can make some computer plots of them, but it's hard to see them because even when they make the plots, you have to have a sparse sampling of data points. You have to imagine, imagine taking a sample point, one sample point every cubic meter in this room. Up, down, low, high, left, right, forward, back. And each of those points, you draw an arrow. And the arrow could have any direction and any length, and the length should be in some sense, representative of the magnitude of the vector. Maybe the length is proportional to the magnitude of the vector. And that's just a visualization. It doesn't show you the arrows at every point, but a 3D vector doesn't want to think of an arrow at every point in 3D space. Maybe the vector f is 3D now, and it's three functions of three variables. We were using p and q, mostly because the book used p and q for the components sometimes. Maybe it's slightly less bad than using f1, f2, f3. It might make some of the formulas a little easier to remember. So. I'll follow that and just tack on the next letter, r. So PQR.
Yeah.
So these are the three components. So it's really a function that takes three real inputs and it gives you three real outputs. And you can imagine something. I mean, the easiest ones to imagine would be ones that are just copies of a simpler vector field. You can take one of the vector fields we already knew in two dimensions and try to basically copy it many times over. So for example, the counterclockwise rotation, I believe it was that. And if you want to, you could just do nothing with the z vector, the z part. There's no z inputs. Right. So in this scenario here, let's see, run y-axis, higher x values, need to fix things. Here on the x-axis, higher y values, zeros. Hit this thing. And of course, it goes around. Yeah. The problem is this is just one slice. And I'm not going to try and draw the whole thing because I think that'll obscure more than it'll enlighten. So imagine then another copy of the same thing up higher. That would be a better illustration of it. So you can imagine a bunch of these arrows that trace out counterclockwise circles around the z-axis and have copies of them over and over and over again. And the way I think about this is, it's counterclockwise rotation around the z-axis. And
What curl does is capture exactly that tendency. In the two-dimensional curl, there's just one output, the output had one dimension. It was a scalar. It was not a vector, right? So like in this example, you would have 1 minus negative,
Did I go clockwise? Or?
I think I went.
That's fine.
I'm drawing it counterclockwise. I'm
not 100% confident I got the formula right for it, though.
Actually, the arrow dependent is actually vice versa. So the little circle with the arrow direction, it's in the other direction.
The front part is going around this way, right?
Yes.
So the back part's going around that way.
Hey.
So that's what I was trying to draw.
Ah, okay.
I guess the kind of front part is represented being a little bit lower, but
yeah.
It's hard to say what's in front and what's behind. That's part of the problem with drawing these things.
Okay.
Let's see. Positive y's are drawn here. And drawn negative x in front, so I think.
I want to match my picture. I think I need to switch the sign.
Yeah. There we go. That's what I want. So that matches my picture.
All right.
One way I can tell is that for counterclockwise, this number should come out positive.
Okay.
That's fine, okay? Positive means a tendency for the vector field to curl counterclockwise. Negative means a clockwise tendency. But in 3D, there's many axes around which you could curl, right? Around which your arrows could tend to turn, counterclockwise or clockwise, right?
In this picture, clearly we're going around the z-axis. So for the 3D curl, that's what you would want. You would want the curl to represent
that same quantified tendency to turn, only now it's going around the z-axis, right? Because in 3D, there's more than one
way to talk about rotation, we'll just clockwise or counterclockwise. It could be around the z-axis. Could have had a totally different vector field. And imagine if I relabeled these things.
Right.
So here's another vector field G, which I can keep the same picture, but I'm going to change everything in terms of what the axes are. X becomes Y, Y becomes Z, and Z becomes X.
So it's called a cyclic permutation.
X, Y, and Z are seated at a circular table, and everybody moves over one chair to the right or something like that. So now this is an X component. So move it over now, make it a Y component, and change that Y to a Z. This is the Y component of the output. Move it over to make it the X component. And change that X to a Y. And this is the Z component of the output. Move it over to be the X component of the output. X goes to Y, Y goes to Z, Z goes to X. Okay. So same picture, but just different coordinate labels. And you can check that this is still a right-handed coordinate system in the sense that if you do I, which is now this way, cross J, which is that way, your thumb still points out towards Z, which is now that way. Now you want to get the same thing.
Except now you want to be curling around the x-axis. Okay, so you want your 3D curl to tell you that the curl of G is this number 2, but instead of around the z-axis, it should be around the x-axis. All right, so we need to have the number over here. And we need to, just as we change from x goes to y, and x goes to, and y goes to z, we also need to change the functions we're differentiating, right? Here we're differentiating the y component, right? Partial derivative of the y component minus a partial derivative of the x component. But we're changing y to z and x to y. So this is going to be become, instead of y component, z component. Instead of x component, y component. Okay. And we're also going to agree that if we say we added vector field F to vector field G, right? Add the negative y to the 0, add the positive x to the negative z, and add the 0 to the positive y, then the curl should add too, so that we get some, the combined vector field would have some rotation that was around an arrow, not the x-axis or the z-axis, but 45 degrees between, right, an intermediate axis, right, 2, 0, 2. Okay. So that's why we're making it a vector, to allow for not just the three standard axes, but any axis is possible now. And we need to fill in the third possibility, right? Because we could be curling around the y-axis.
What is the difference between the partial derivatives of the components given the curl?
What is the difference between each?
Yeah, why is the difference, or why is the subtraction between the partial derivatives of the components give us the curl?
Well, it's the definition of curl. So you're kind of asking, why does the definition work?
Well, sort of, yeah.
Well, there's kind of two parts to it. Why does partial q partial x contribute to a counterclockwise rotation? Right? If you have positive partial q partial x, what does that mean?
So that would just be the vertical part of your vector field, right?
So
just forget about the p for a moment and think about what this would look like, okay? What would this vector field look like?
There'd never be a component, a horizontal component. The arrows are always going to point straight up or straight down. How do they do that, though? Well, over here, you have little arrows. When x is little, and they're pointing up because x is positive. Over here, you have little down arrows. Right? X is small but negative. Out here, you have big vertical arrows pointing up because x is big and positive. And out here you have big negative arrows. Mm-hmm. So think of it as two infinite conveyor belts, or a bunch of, actually, well, here's an infinite conveyor belt, and we're going up this way and down this way. And here's the other one, up this way and down this way, except we're going faster out here. Right. Now, let me fill it in with a little bit of an intermediate thing. Okay. Now imagine you interpret these, say, imagine these are forces or velocities of, say, ocean currents or something like that, on a small scale, say, so that you imagine some kind of a boat here, all right? What's going to happen to this boat if it gets pushed a little bit by water here, up in the upward direction, and a lot by water here, right? It's going to get pushed harder on this end. It's going to get pushed and it's going to turn. Okay.
going to get turned counterclockwise.
And if you want the partial p, partial y, you draw a similar picture. So make it a negative y and a zero. So again, the curl is going to be 1. You could imagine, what does this look like? So now it's always horizontal. When y is positive, the vector field points to the left because the horizontal output will be negative. And it's more to the left the higher up you go. I mean, it's stronger, pushing stronger to the left. So again, if you're a boat in this situation, you're going to get pushed hard. The water pushes hard on you here, and only a little bit here. So you're going to get turned.
Okay. That's kind of the intuitive reasoning behind it. And mathematically, it seems to produce good answers, and it doesn't violently conflict with our intuition. So, if you try and map it to some precise physical meaning, there may be additional subtleties, in the interpretation, right? But this is the rough idea of why it corresponds to a counterclockwise turn.
Too hazy, or?
No, it makes sense.
Okay.
A definition is not right or wrong, it's just useful or not useful. So I think this is a useful definition. What was I doing with the green marker?
I was going to talk about the third rotation here. Right?
So imagine another labeling now.
So again, everyone at the circular table, the three variables x, y, and z change places.
So now y moves into z's chair, and z moves into x's chair, and x moves into y's chair. And so you can imagine a third vector field here. What would happen? Okay, so the x component goes to the x component goes to the y component. So what was the x component output of 0 becomes a y component output of 0. The y component output of negative z becomes a z component output of what? Well, we're changing the z inputs into x inputs. So the z component output comes from the opposite of the x component of input now. And then here we have the z component of the output, which we are changing to be x component of output. So this positive term moves over here. Now the y component of input is becoming the z component of output. Y component of input is becoming z component of input. So hence the plus the z there. Okay? And then we do another thing here in the formula for curl, because now in the green labeling, this represents counterclockwise rotation about the y-axis. And you can check that it's still a right-handed coordinate system. The new x cross the new y, right? Well, I should say, I guess positive I, positive j, right? Positive x direction, positive y direction. My thumb still is trying to point out in the positive z direction. Now, let's see here. Okay, this is z component of output, but we change z to x, so now we want x component of output. And then we had y component of input here. We're changing that to z component of input. And then we have y component of output, which becomes z component of output, and then z component of input, which becomes x component of
input.
So there's a circle there. That I did. Outputs, inputs. So if you believe in the two-dimensional curl, this is a very reasonable choice for defining your three-dimensional curl. Now, the curl had another nice property, so it's just sort of capturing our intuitions about a rotation of a vector field. The curl also is capturing the failure of a function to be a gradient, right? In two dimensions, a vector field was a gradient, essentially, if and only if the curl was zero. There are some extra conditions like continuity and no holes in a region and stuff, right? To it. But one thing we knew for sure was that if your vector field is a gradient, right? I guess we should write it, if the vector field is a gradient, then the curl is zero, right? Okay. Now we actually get the same property in three dimensions. Except now the curl is a vector, and so we say that the curl is the zero vector, meaning no rotation around the x-axis, no rotation around the y-axis, and no rotation around the z-axis either.
Okay. Can you repeat that? No rotations in the algebra?
No rotations around the x-axis, no rotations around the y-axis, and no rotations around the z-axis either.
And why is that?
Well, because if your vector field curls, then you can do a loop integral and get a positive number if you go with the flow, so to speak.
Yes. Right?
Like in this example, if I make a loop like this, if I make a loop like this, and I integrate, right, along this loop, here I'm going with the vector field, so it's positive part of the integral. Over here, I'm going perpendicular to the vector field. It contributes nothing. Over here, positive. I'm going with the flow again. Over here, nothing, because I'm going perpendicular to the flow.
Even though the arrows go down, right?
Well, because, well, my path is going down and the arrows are going down. So the dot product, imagine a little black arrow here, is pointing in the same direction as a green arrow. The dot product is positive. So the loop as a whole is positive. Where if this was a gradient, then the loop integral would just be the start value of your function g that you're taking the gradient of minus the end value. A loop integral always comes out zero if you're integrating a gradient. But as you can see, if you have a curl, you can cook up loops with non-zero integrals, non-zero line integrals. Yeah. And that's the visual reason, I guess you could say, or physical reason, geometrical reason. The algebraic reason, of course, is that if P is the x partial of G and Q is the y partial of G, then partial Q partial x is the x partial of the y partial of G, which is the same as the y partial of the x partial of G, assuming enough continuity, which is then partial P partial y, right? Well, in 3D, you have more of that, right? So this part would be 2D right here. But for 3D, you would have that equation and two more equations, right? Because what if you also had that you had a function of three variables, and you had and therefore it's three-dimensional gradient, right? So what if you had Q is, again, the y partial, and R is the the z partial of the same function g. Well, now you get the same phenomenon, right? Partial r, partial z should be the z partial of the partial r partial y should be the y partial of the z partial of g, right? Because we're taking the y partial of r, which is the z partial of g. Well, assuming enough continuity, that would be the same as the z partial of the y partial, which would then be the z partial of q over there, if we indeed have q as the y partial. So you would need not only for partial q partial x to equal partial q partial y, right? You would also need partial r partial y to equal partial q partial z.
I should have done that in blue. Oh well.
And then there would be a green one as well, right? If r is indeed the z partial derivative of some function, and p is the x partial derivative of some function, then you'll get the same phenomenon. Partial q partial z will be the z partial of the x partial of your function g, which, assuming enough continuity, will be the same as the x partial of the z partial of g, which will be, under our assumptions here, the x partial of r. So if we actually have a gradient of a function of three variables, then you can see that all three components of this curl vector here that I've defined have to be zero.
Why is it partial q partial x minus partial p partial y and not partial p partial y minus partial q partial x?
Yes.
That's just an arbitrary thing. We needed a way to distinguish between, you know, clockwise and counterclockwise. And if you go 60 degrees clockwise and, or 60 degrees clockwise and then 60 degrees counterclockwise, it's supposed to add up to zero,
yes.
Right? So we had to pick one to be positive, one to be negative. But there's not really a right or wrong answer to that.
Okay.
I'm not saying right-handed coordinates are better than left-handed coordinate systems. It's just in our particular place in history, people use right-handed coordinate systems. So if you want to talk with them, you should use right-handed coordinate systems too.
Curl of this vector. Okay.
Now, one way to try and memorize these formulas is you could take my approach and how I taught it here was start with the two-dimensional formula and then do this cyclic permutation of the variables to produce the other two components that you need.
I use a similar method to memorize the cross product. But some people memorize the cross product formula another way, and there's a connection. People think of this as a cross product because if you forget about the fact that we're not really multiplying anything by R, right? We're taking a
partial derivative of R
when we write partial R, partial Y. If you just forget about that fact and look at the notation, just think of it as a language construct here. Think of it as instead of multiplication, rather application of something. Just like we write f of x, it doesn't mean f times x, it means apply the function f to the input x. Well, if you think of this cross product here as not being so much as a product as a sort of twisted application, right, then applying the right partial derivatives to the right components of the vector field will reproduce my formula here. Right? So if you like this determinant notation, right, you could also think of it this way. Here I've abbreviated it. This is another partial derivative notation, just subscripts. And in our case, what are we going to get? So I'm just going to read off from here because that will be faster than reinventing this thing. I've already written down one. Okay. Partial R, partial Y. Right? Here's our... Okay, so the Y partial of... You know, this is just going to be crowded if I try and write it there. Let's just write it down. So partial x partial y minus partial q partial z. So partial z partial z. Okay. Partial p partial z minus partial r partial x. So partial y partial... No. Yes. I got it. Yes. Minus partial... Yes, that's right. And then the third component here of the curl will be partial q partial x minus partial p partial y. So partial z partial x minus partial y partial y. Okay, so you get 0 minus 1, 0 minus 1, 0 minus 1, which is just negative 1, negative 1, negative 1, or if you like, negative I minus J minus K, okay? Which would be the same thing as if you like determinants, it would look like this, right? So, for example, that I here would get multiplied by the determinant of this little 2 by 2 down here, partial y, partial x, minus partial z. Y partial of x minus z partial of z, which is exactly what I have here. The y partial derivative of x minus the z partial derivative of z. And so we get negative 1, negative 1, negative 1. So what this means is you could think of this as a counterclockwise rotation around this arrow. Or you could think of it as a clockwise rotation around the opposite of the arrow. Of course, a vector field doesn't have to be the same everywhere. Just as it can have different magnitudes and different directions at different points in space, it can also curl different ways in different points in space. Right? In one part of space, it could be rotating around a certain direction, right? Certain axis. But in another part of space, it could rotate in a different way. So the curl doesn't have to come out a constant. It came out at a constant in these examples because we're picking very simple examples. This one's not quite as trivial, but now depending on where you are, the vector field will curl around a different axis, around a different direction. What would this be? So we would need, let's see, for example, I'm kind of funny, I usually like to start with the z part and then do the x part and then the y part.
So I'm thinking of it that way. So I'm thinking partial q, partial x minus partial p, partial y. So x partial of this, x partial of that, minus y partial of that. And then x partial. Okay, so now I'm going to have now everything changes places, so instead of y component, I want z component, so I want the partial derivative of zx with respect to, but now instead of x, I'm thinking y.
Maybe I should write it in blue, huh?
My funny way of thinking here, permuting all the variable names here. And let's see. And then instead of this component, I want the next component. And I want it, instead of its partial derivative with respect to y, I want the partial derivative with respect to z.
And then in the middle, okay, I need to rotate things one more time. So instead of zx, I want to go around and get xy.
And instead of partial with respect to y, I want the partial derivative with respect to the next one, z. And then here, so the yz, I want the next one now in my ordering here, going around, going from left to right and then coming back around. So yz, next one is zx. And then instead of the partial derivative with respect to z, I want the next one, so to speak, is x, y, z, and then go back to x. A little crowded.
Let's see.
Anyways. Okay, so what do we get now? We get something similar to this one. Not quite the same. It's now zero again here, right? Because zx, you hold zx constant when you take the y partial derivative. So this is a constant and its derivative is zero. And then here, well, you're thinking of y as a constant multiple of z here, so the partial derivative is y times 1. So it's just going to be negative y. And then here, again, xy being held constant when I take a z partial derivative, so 0 minus, now, zx, taking the x partial derivative of that,
hold the z constant, it's a constant multiple of x.
So you have the x derivative of x, which is 1 times the z. And then
yz x partial derivative will be, well, zero, because you're holding y and z constant. And here when we take a y partial derivative of xy, you're holding the x constant and the z constant, but there's no z in there to worry about. So it's going to be the derivative 1 times the constant multiple of x. Okay, so that's a little more interesting. Now, the vector field can rotate counterclockwise around any axis you want, provided you're in the right position in space. There isn't complete freedom, though, because if you pick a point in space far away from the magnitude, far away from the origin, the magnitude of your input will be bigger, and you'll see then that the magnitude of your output is also bigger. So it's not total freedom. You're spinning around faster or making tighter turns when you're further away from the origin. I will see if I can whip up a computer plot of this for you later. What does this thing look like? If the curl is the zero vector everywhere, then find a function where f is the gradient of that function. Okay. Now, how do you do that? Just like we did in two dimensions. You take a fixed start point, probably the origin, and then you integrate out to an arbitrary endpoint. Right? That was how we did those. So I'm going to pick ones where the functions are just polynomials in each component, so you won't have to worry about blow up at the origin. So just use this. So we're doing this kind of line integral now. There's a number of choices of the paths. You could do a straight line path. You could do kind of the L path I did, where you go in the X direction, then the Y direction. Now it's 3D. You need to make another turn, so then you go in the Z direction.
So there's five different fields you can look at. As I said, plotting these is not easy, so I'm not going to ask you to do that. If you want to try and plot them, I will
send out some of my means of plotting them once I get it ready, but it's not a requirement to figure out how to plot these.
Okay, and so we have some homework to do, and let's see, when is the next batch due here? Because now that you're turning in this batch, you want to think about the next batch, and it is due, so the next batch is due on May 3rd.
Class days after
the last one signed. I said that I would devote the last 10 minutes to people doing online evaluations with their personal devices if the response rate was under 50%. But the response rate got up to a little bit over 50%. So thank you to everyone that's evaluated me. I'll see your comments on May 23rd. If you still haven't evaluated this course and you'd like to, go online and do it. Today's your last day. Thank you.